This is Paul Douglas Boyer. You're listening to the Mad Money Machine, show 145, February 6th, 2009.
This is not America. Sha-la-la-la-la. A little piece of you. A little piece in me. Fails to bloom the season. Promise not to stay too long.
This is not America.
For this is not America. There was a time a song that blew so pure. For this could be the biggest
What an amazing song. I found that searching for David Bowie and Pat Metheny's version of This Is Not America from the movie The Falcon and the Snowman, the original soundtrack. And that one is a remake, just a year or so old, from Bardo State. And I'll have a link to that so you can purchase it from Amazon. The MP3 file of that is only 89 cents. So go out and grab a copy of This Is Not America. The theme of show 145 this week. The Mad Money Machine is proud to be brought to you by Index Funds Advisors. Check them out on the web at ifa.com. You need to go out there and do three things. First of all, take their risk capacity survey to see how much risk you should be taking with your investments. Second thing is benchmark your portfolio to find out how your portfolio stacked up against index portfolios in the past several years. And the third thing then, sign up for an account with IFA. Let them help you manage your financial freedom. Got an email from Chip in Terre Haute, and he asks me, Paul, I don't know if you recall ever talking about any of his books, and perhaps you may have no interest in any of his work, but I just received an email forwarded from a friend touting a new book by Mr. Kiyosaki that is supposedly available to read online at no charge. Plus, it seems to be, quote, interactive. I have no idea what that means, but I'll at least explore the website just because I'm curious. And the website for Mr. Kiyosaki's new book is called conspiracyoftherich.com. Now, you remember who Mr. Kiyosaki is, right? He is the son of the rich dad and the poor dad. Yep, he's the author of the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that I read a long time ago. And I think the bottom line of the book, as I recall, was buy real estate and manage real estate, and you'll be on your way to wealth that way. Well, I guess in these times, Mr. Kiyosaki has to come up with something new. I know he's had a lot of books. Some of them talk about how you should start and run a business. And a lot of them talk about how investing in the stock market is not a good thing. And at the time, I thought, well, this guy's crazy. Obviously, you know, he's wrong. But I guess with stocks down 50%, maybe he wasn't so wrong after all. I don't know. But this new book is still different. Now, let me tell you about how different it is than his other work, as far as I know it. But I have to tell one more thing before I get to that. And that is, if you remember, about 1 year ago, I played a little clip from a YouTube video that they had. Mr. Kiyosaki's team was giving a briefing, And one of the members of his team was Mike Malone, or Mike Maloney. And he, at that time, was talking about how gold, because of the falling value of the dollar, gold prices could go up, you know, 10, 100, 1,000 times, or a, what was it, quadrillion times, or a septillion, I think was the word he used. And so I got a sense at that time that Mr. Kiyosaki was really considering this idea of something's wrong with the foundations of our monetary system. And that's where I get to this new book now. The Conspiracy of the Rich is the new book. You go to that website, conspiracyoftherich.com. You see actually a picture there. The front page, it's a picture shot sort of in profile of Robert Kiyosaki looking at his iMac computer. Looks like he's doing word processing. He's writing something. He's got his coffee mug on a table, and he's got a stack of books over behind his arm, which is held up. His lips are biting his finger as he studies his work. Now, behind his arm on the table there, that stack of books, I know because I have a copy. The book on top there, which is partially obscured by his arm, is entitled The Creature from Jekyll Island. And this is the book that really gets into talking about the Federal Reserve and why the monetary system is created to help the rich. And so you can see where Robert Kiyosaki is going with this book, Conspiracy of the Rich. Now, at this moment, there are two chapters that you can read online. You do have to sign up for an account with him to get access to the book. Otherwise, I guess it's free. And the table of contents says, chapter introduction, The Root of All Evil. Chapter 1, Can Obama Save the World? And you can read those two chapters so far online. Chapter 2, The Conspiracy Against Education. Chapter 3, The Conspiracy Against Your Mind. 4, War and Patriotism, The Conspiracy of Those. 5, Conspiracy Against Money. 6, Conspiracy of the Media. And on and on through, looks like there's 12 chapters he's hoping to put in there. And so if you read the chapter, Can Obama Save the World? He gets into some discussion. Let me get to the page here. Page 13, I believe it is. He actually talks about the current economic crisis. He talks about the TARP. So you can tell that this book is being written as we're reading it. I think the chapter was just released. Yesterday, I think, is one of the dates. Yeah, but let me go back to page 10. Before that, he talks about the Federal Reserve and how it was a conspiracy. And then on page 10, he says, how does this affect me? He says, in the big picture of personal finance, there are three financial forces that cause most people to work hard and yet struggle financially. And these three financial forces are, 1, taxes, 2, debt, and 3, inflation. And he goes on to explain why each one of these are problems for us. He says that the reason for the income tax was to capitalize the U.S. Treasury and the Federal Reserve. Now the rich could put their hands in our pockets via taxes permanently. Point number 2, the debt. He says the Federal Reserve system gave politicians the power to borrow money rather than raise taxes. Debt, however, is a double-edged sword that results in either higher taxes or inflation. The U.S. government creates money rather than raising taxes by selling U.S. bonds, IOUs from the taxpayers of the country that eventually have to be paid for with higher taxes, or by printing more money, which causes inflation. And then inflation, number 3. He says that inflation is caused by the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Treasury borrowing money or printing money to pay the government's bills. That's why inflation is often called the silent tax. Well, I would encourage you to go take a look at it, conspiracyoftherich.com. Maybe follow along as he's writing the chapters. It seems like most of the material I've heard before other places, but we'll see if he adds anything new. Also, I advise you to be cautious when you're reading his suggestions. But I also think that perhaps Mr. Kiyosaki would agree that this is not America.
Your name is devastation. You fill us with frustration. You could have.
Got a pretty sickening email in the mail just a couple of days ago. It says, "Dear Paul, your web hosting account for madmoneymachine.com has been deactivated. Reason, site causing performance problems. Although your website has been disabled, your data may still be available for up to 15 days, after which it will be deleted." Oh, man. Yeah, and I tried to go out to madmoneymachine.com and said, you know, not available. Website not available. Oh, my goodness. So, of course, I had to spend a couple of hours calling on the phone, getting in, looking at the internals of log files and PHP scripts and trying to figure out why my website was causing performance problems. And I did delete a couple of PHP scripts that were not necessary. One of them was the PHP list mailing list that I had. I had put together a mailing list a long time ago and never did really use it, so might as well turn it off, right? And then also PodPress, which is one of the plugins for WordPress that enables me to do the podcasting feed into iTunes. It's kind of not 100% quality, I guess. It's got some strange things going on with it, so I disabled its statistics module. But now, if you're listening to this, then Mad Money Machine is still, for the moment, active. One of the other things that you'll find, if you do go out to madmoneymachine.com, is on, let's see, February 4th, I think, I made an entry, The Index Funds the Musical. Now, I have spent some time putting together a video using Keynote on the Mac that goes along with, remember the audio that I did a couple of years ago? Index funds, the 12-step program for active investors. Each of the 12 steps, I found a PodSafe song, and then I interpreted that song in light of being an active investor. And you remember, oh, my name is Paul, and I'm an active investor. Remember that part? And then I would do my little bit about me being an active investor. Then I'd play the song, and then I'd go into sort of a lecture mode and talk about that particular step and the things you need to know to be a good investor. Well, now for those of you who don't like just listening, you're more of a visual person. Why don't you go out and click on those? There are four YouTube videos broken up into chunks of steps 1 through 3, 4 through 6, 7 through 9, 10 through 12. Watch all four, and if you do watch them, click on the bottom right corner, and there's an arrow button there. A little menu thing will come up. Click HQ, because these were uploaded in high definition. And to get the most indexing flavor out of these, you're going to want to watch them in high definition. Also, subscribe to IFA's Quote of the Week podcasts. I'll be recording more of these in upcoming days and weeks. And you'll get to hear my voice yet again in another podcast. So I'll have a link to it in the show notes of show 145, where you can subscribe to IFA's Quote of the Week podcast and other things as they release them. Gene in Arizona. Beautiful Arizona. Wish I was there this time of year. He says, "Hello, Paul. I enjoyed your show 143, but one of the things that you mentioned was to go to IFA and compare our own portfolio performance results with the appropriate IFA index portfolio. However, going to IFA, all the portfolios, returns, and performance information either appears to be only through 2007, the returns matrix, or when you click on a portfolio, 50, for example, the data is only through September 30th of 2008. Where do I find up-to-date performance info on these portfolios? Thanks, Gene in Arizona. Well, what you need to do is go to their Benchmark Your Portfolio tool. And if you go to ifa.com, it should be the number 2 item in the middle column there, Benchmark Your Portfolio. And there you can select any range of months going all the way back, I think, to 1928 up until and through the most recent months. And I'm not sure of whether January's in there just yet or not. It soon will be, probably by the time you're listening to this. And also, yeah, so that is a good thing to do. Get out your 2008 financial statement from your 401k plan or your financial planner or whoever's, if you're managing your own money. Take a look at your statement for 2008. What returns did you get? Compare that using the Benchmark Your Portfolio tool at ifa.com. And make sure you're comparing apples to apples. You know, if you've got half bonds, then you're going to want to pick an index portfolio that has about half bonds as well. Because it's risk that's the source of returns. And you're going to want to make sure your portfolios are compared on a basis of equal risk. And of course, 2008 was not such a great year for equities and even some of the other investments. But so maybe take your statements out from several years. Go back 5, 10 years if you got it. Do a comparison there. It's time now for the Learning Earning segment, where we learn how to earn our financial freedom, brought to you by Index Funds Advisors. And we are almost to the end of the IFA investment principles. Now, one thing I think you should know about the IFA investment principles is these aren't just principles that IFA implements themselves. These are principles that you should also implement in your investments, even if you're a do-it-yourselfer. We are on number 6 out of 7 this week. And just to kind of recap, remember, number 1, the first investment principle was capitalism works on average and over time. So if you want to invest, it's probably a good place to be, is investing in capitalism. Number 2, risk and return have a positive correlation. So if you want higher returns, you're going to have to take higher risk. If you want to take lower risk, you're going to have to accept lower returns. Number 3, free markets match prices to current levels of uncertainty so that buyers can earn a risk-appropriate return. Basically, stocks are priced according to their risk at any given moment in time. Number 4, the greater the risk, the longer the time required to obtain the expected return. So if you do want to get higher returns, then you do, and you do want to take higher risk, you are going to need a longer time horizon to reap the rewards of that risk. And number 5, last week's was passively invest, diversify to the maximum, maintain a small and value tilt, and keep turnover, costs, and taxes to a minimum. And this week, number 6, the 6th IFA investment principle is risk exposure must be initially matched to the investor's risk capacity, then monitored and maintained through rebalancing. So how do we, so what is all this saying here? First of all, you need to know what your risk capacity is. And you can take that risk capacity survey to get your index portfolio, your index number. You can either invest with IFA in that portfolio, or you can kind of do it yourself by trying to match up the funds that IFA recommends in that particular risk capacity. Let's say that you're you come out as a portfolio 50. They're going to have a mix of stocks and bonds in there. They're going to have a mix of U.S., international, emerging market. They're going to have total stock market. They're going to have small cap. They're going to have value stocks for each one of those regions. And then, of course, they're going to have short-term and medium and long-term bonds, both U.S. and global. And so according to your risk capacity, they're going to tune how much of the fixed income there is in your portfolio versus the equities. And also, your risk capacity talks about basically five dimensions that you need to look at to understand what do we mean by your risk capacity. There are five things that basically come out. First of all, the time horizon, of course. We talked about if you need to invest in risky assets, you're going to need a longer time horizon. Your income. How much income do you receive annually? That will guide how much risk you can take with your investments. What is your current net worth? That will guide how much risk you can take with your investments. What is your attitude toward risk? If you really don't want to ever experience a large loss, then you should take less risk with your investments. And finally, what is your investment knowledge? If you really understand what I'm talking about here with standard deviation and the ups and downs of the marketplace, then you can probably afford to take a little higher risk. So you match that risk with the proper risk exposure, and then you monitor that. And about annually, maybe, you can rebalance your portfolio so that it stays in the same amount of risk that you should have with your investments. Or if your risk changes for some reason, maybe your net worth went down, maybe your income went down, maybe you have a lower capacity for risk, and therefore you will need to shift your assets down into a lower risk portfolio. Well, that is investment principle number 6. The Learning Earnings segment, brought to you by Index Funds Advisors. Well, I still have it on my to-do list to investigate this Harry Brown permanent portfolio a little bit more thoroughly. I did go out to the Bogleheads group and download Simba's spreadsheet of back-tested portfolio information, and he has in that spreadsheet all of the annual returns for all of the Vanguard funds, and you can mix and match in there and compare the Sharpe ratio and the performance valuation for these Vanguard funds. I went in and substituted into one of those funds instead the gold prices at the end of each year. And I don't like the fact that he only does it at year end. I think I'd like to at least see monthly returns in that spreadsheet. So I'm going to try to work on my own spreadsheet, and I'm going to try to put it in Google Spreadsheets so that I can make it available to you on the web. I'll let you know when I've got it. And speaking of to-do lists, let's pull something out of the Mad Money Machine tool crib. I have talked in the past about how much I really want an outliner that works on all my platforms, Windows, Mac, and iPhone. And we're almost there with Google Tasks. See, I have a Gmail account. I've talked about that. There is a Google Labs tool that you can add into Gmail called Tasks. And what it does, it brings up a little window inside your mail, your Gmail window, that allows you to simply enter one line items, and Gmail then keeps track of these items. You can have multiple categories, which is one good thing. So in a sense, it gives you one level of nesting in this outline. For example, I've got one major task category called MMM Show Ideas. And inside there, I list the things that I want to talk about on the next show. Well, that's pretty cool. But here's the really cool thing that just came out this week. Google has released the ability for you to get to that tasks on your iPhone. And the way to do it is, of course, on your iPhone, bring up the Safari browser, point to the web page of gmail.com/tasks. Of course, you will have had to be logged into your Gmail account through that web browser. But right there, then, on your iPhone, you can see exactly the same tasks that you have in your Gmail account, either on the Mac or on Windows. And now you can see it on the iPhone. And I'm loving it. I'd love to see Google make a couple of enhancements to it, of course. But for starters, I think it's pretty cool. And that is the tool in the crib this week, Gmail Tasks. And like other tools I've given you so far, it is free. So I think this topic of where does the money come from to pay the interest has really touched a nerve. I've gotten several comments about this from people, both in the email and at drop.io. And I got this voicemail from John at drop.io/madmoneymachine. Let me just let John explain it.
Hey, Paul, I'm back with another comment about usury and interest.
I've actually snipped out a little part where he reads quotes from Plato and Aristotle. Picking up with the last of the quote from Aristotle, here we go.
Since usury is very justifiably detested, since it gets wealth from money itself rather than from the very thing money was designed to facilitate. For money was introduced to facilitate exchange, but interest makes money itself grow bigger. Hence, of all the kinds of wealth acquisition, this one is the most unnatural. Goes on to write in at the Nicomachean Ethics, Aristotle says, people go to excess in taking by taking anything from any source. Usurers who lend small amounts at high interest take the wrong amounts from the wrong source. And currency has become a sort of pledge of need by convention. In fact, it has its name because it is not by nature, but by the current law, and it is within our power to alter it and to make it useless. So there are two very early sources talking about how interest is bad, but I think that the interpretation over the many, many years, including through the church and the Bible and religions, that kind of thing, has been to think about usury as taking advantage of somebody else. And that, you know, as a holy person or a godly person, you would not want to harm somebody by taking advantage. You should be willing to give them your money and get money back without any interest for that, because, you know, you are doing God's work. You're helping that person out. Thus, you shouldn't ask for interest. Well, I don't think that people over the years, whether they be scholars or church fathers, things like that, really quite understood, perhaps anyway, what the economic and monetary function is of money and interest. So, but that concept is still out there. I mean, what is the interest? Where does it come from? Here's a quote from a book called The Web of Debt. I highly recommend it. Here is Bernard Leiter, who helped design the single currency system in the euro. He explains the interest problem like this. When a bank provides you with a $100,000 mortgage, it creates only the principal, which you spend and which then circulates in the economy. The bank expects you to pay back $200,000 over the next 20 years, but it doesn't create the second $100,000, the interest. Instead, the bank sends you out into the tough world to battle against everybody else to bring back that second $100,000. And the author of The Web of Debt, Ellen Hodgkins Brown, goes on and says, the problem is that all money, except coins, now comes from bank-created loans. So the only way to get the interest owed on old loans is to take out new loans, continually inflating the money supply. Either that or some borrowers have to default. And she quotes Leiter, continued here, greed and competition are not a result of immutable human temperament. Greed and fear of scarcity are in fact being continuously created and amplified as a direct result of the kind of money we are using. We can produce more than enough food to feed everybody, and there is definitely enough work for everybody in the world, but there is clearly not enough money to pay for it all. The scarcity is in our national currencies. In fact, the job of central banks is to create and maintain that currency scarcity. The direct consequence is that we have to fight with each other in order to survive. Again, that's a quote from the book The Web of Debt. Paul, I've been kind of consumed by this whole subject, as you can tell, but I put together a blog out there. It's called Where's the Interest? You can go to wheresTheInterest.com, kind of a play on Where's the Beef from those Wendy's commercials. Anyway, check out the website. I'll be blog posting anything I find. Find out more information about this fascinating subject of usury and interest. Where does it come from? Where are we going? What's going to happen to us? I don't know. But thanks a lot, Paul. I'm out.
Well, thanks a lot, John, for taking that on. And thanks for your website, wheresTheInterest.com. I don't think interest is itself evil, because if I'm going to loan somebody some money, I'm going to expect something back, I think, for the use of my money, the time value of my money, and for me taking the risk that you're not going to pay me back at all. So there is a place for interest, I do believe. But it's just the fact of fractional reserve banking, when a bank creates money and then expects you to pay back more money. I just don't know where the money comes from to pay back the interest on the money that didn't exist in the first place. There are some other postings at drop.io/madmoneymachine. People have weighed in on this topic, both trying to explain where the interest does come from and trying to explain that where it doesn't come from. So I encourage you to take a look at those. Also, John, I'll make a note. I think you should note that at your site, when you click on one of the archives links, you get a fatal error. So just like I had some site problems, your site has one problem there too. I was trying to go back and read some of the archives of the blog postings and so forth. Thanks so much anyway. Fascinating topic. I hope we figure it out. If you'd like to get your feedback to me, there's several ways to do that. One is to email it, feedback@madmoneymachine.com. Another one is, of course, to go out to drop.io/madmoneymachine. Or you can call me and leave a voicemail message, 571-366-7121. Twitter me at twitter.com/madmoneymachine. Skype me at madmoneymachine. And, of course, go to the madmoneymachine.com website and take the MMM survey in the second column. What a plaintive song with the French horns.
Little piece of you, a little piece in me, will die. This is not a miracle, for this is not a miracle.
Are French horns always so haunting?
Also fails to bloom the season. Promise not to.
Well, this is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes knowing that this is not America to make a Mad Money Machine. I'll see you next Friday. I hope that in the meantime you will go out and visit IFA.com and do the things that I recommended at the beginning of the show. Other than the songs at the front and the last, other music on this program is provided by music.podshow.com. Check the links in the show notes to purchase a copy of This Is Not America.
This is not America. No, this is not America.
I'll see you next Friday.